Actually, we'll be interviewing as a team.
We're here to fuck shit up.
Bring me out. Can you introduce me as
Jake?
Stuart.
And I'm Matt.
And this is the Nuclear Fridge.
It's completely insane. You guys are idiots.
Do you have nuclear weapons?
In the fridge.
Is that nuclear waste?
This whole fridge is a joke.
You are a regular nuclear meltdown.
You and I are not so different.
Stupid fridge guys.
Well, to each his own.
Go to school, boys.
You know, actually, did we stop doing the intro before or after Jake left?
I don't like no intro.
Well, it that's was how it's
the
happening.
Last episode I was on, we didn't do an intro.
Right.
And we
right.
had the well, discussion we've continued about that intros.
Trend. Yeah, we've continued that trend. But hey, buddy, but we've missed ya.
It's been a while. It's been a couple intro. Weeks.
Famed director Jacob Decker back in
Jacob director,
in his old
more
stomping
like.
Grounds. Oh, yeah. Oh man. Fucking that's what Hollywood does to you. It fucking overdrives your puns.
Yeah. Yeah. That's clever. What I've learned from this is puns.
Clever guy.
No, it's a
clever guy.
It's nice to be back. It's been what? I missed three episodes, four episodes. I actually could have been on last week. But something happened. Yeah. I don't remember what it was. Oh, my parents were in town. And
oh my God.
Yeah,
I'm glad that sentence ended the way it did.
Why?
Because you were like, something happened. Oh, right, my parents. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I guess like, I could have been bad. No, they were in town. And if I had said something, I'm sure we could have rescheduled. But I did not say anything because I forgot about it until the day of.
Was it last week or the week before, Stuart, that I had diarrhea and had to postpone?
That was last week.
Yeah, we postponed Wednesday because I had diarrhea on Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well,
we totally could have done it.
Letting me know. Or no, I think that's what it was because my parents were here Thursday. I don't know.
Oh, well, whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. We talked about the Oscars, this year's Oscars,
thank
not
God,
next
I don't
year's
need to
Oscars.
Be here for that conversation.
Yeah. Well, it was good. I don't know. We had a fun time talking about the nominees and all that.
The snubs, the noms.
The snubs and dubs. Next year, Jacob Decker will be in the short film category that we won't talk about.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Let's do that.
Jake, let me put my interviewer hat on. Let me get back into the frame of college and
be a
my
journalist
past career.
Again.
Yeah.
You didn't put a hat on.
I do. I actually did.
Yeah, you just can't see it, Stuart, because
I can see it.
No, Stuart, you can't because you don't. You don't,
don't
want to do camera podcast, video podcast.
I don't have camera.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
I don't have one.
Yeah. A likely excuse. Anyway, Jake, I want to know how the fuck was directing a short film? How was the experience?
It was exciting. It was really stressful. I didn't sleep a lot during that weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, mostly just because I'd be stressing about things at night. Like, technically, we only filmed from, like, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. or so. So I had plenty of time to sleep, but I just didn't because my brain was too focused on filming and that sort of thing. But it was a fun experience. I forgot how much I missed maybe not so much being on set because it's really stressful, but I miss the camaraderie of shooting with the crew. We had a pretty decent sized crew, probably about 15 or so people, plus six people in the cast, which is a lot for a short film with a small budget, especially when everyone are SAG actors because you have to pay them. And it's not cheap. So, yeah.
Damn, I didn't realize you were paying these people.
Yeah, everyone
it
on
was
the
a legit production.
Yeah, everyone on the production Damn. Side got paid. As far as I know, I wasn't really in charge of that. I was the producer who was doing that. So I don't know. If someone didn't get paid who was on the set and you're listening to this, email Martin.
All right, I'll email him later for my paycheck.
Yeah, do it. But no, it was a lot of fun. I just saw a rough cut the other day. There's this thing, and that a lot of directors experience. I'm sure you guys have heard it in one sense or another, but a lot of times when a director sees a first cut, they cry for many reasons. Usually it's
so goddamn beautiful.
No, it's usually a cry of like, what have I done? I've fucked everything. I didn't cry, but I definitely panicked when I watched it. When I watched it the first time, not necessarily because it wasn't good. It was mostly just like, I don't know. It's a bizarre feeling where it's like you have this vision in your head and then you see what actually happened and it doesn't quite match. And it's not bad that it doesn't match, but it's just kind of like jarring, I suppose. I don't know. It's a weird feeling. It's something I completely forgot about because I kind of remember experiencing that when I was in film school and I directed a couple shorts. But considering this was way more... The stakes were a lot higher. I think there was a lot more emotion when I saw the rough cut. So yeah, you know who's editing it, Matt?
Yeah, I do. Our good friend Ali Hank.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch it. When can the beautiful people? When can I watch
it? I'll probably share a cut with friends a little sooner. Like I said, we only have a rough cut now, and I don't really want to show that to people until it's a little more put together.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm hoping like April or May.
That's not a bad time frame.
It's a couple months.
Yeah. Two months away. Yeah. I mean, like editing shouldn't take too long. We've got a composer working on it. Sound design takes forever. So, and mixing, all that stuff. So who knows? We're also like, it's easier to like on the production days, people show up and just work throughout the day. You have a plan of what you want to accomplish. You ideally leave with all that accomplished. With post-production, it can be a little looser because, there are so many other factors that can extend the process. Like we noticed, we forgot to cover up a tattoo, which could mean some, if we don't get a sign off from the tattoo artist, we could have to do like post-production to hide the tattoo.
Right.
So just shit like that, which can extend the thing. And, you know, composer working on the music, like, I don't produce music at all. Don't understand it, but I imagine there's sometimes that takes long because it can take a while to find the music that truly fits with the thing itself. But yeah, I'm excited. It's a little horror short for those who don't know. It's not like breaking new ground or anything. It's not going to be crazy ridiculous, but I think it's fun. I think it's a fun little dark comedy horror film that I hope make people laugh.
I look awesome. Forward to it.
I'm fucking stoked to watch it. I'm super proud of you. I had had all this fucking pride and made me want to be more creative. So I've been writing and
it definitely makes me want to produce more short films. I was like the 2 days of shooting with months of pre-production. I was like thinking to myself, like, I don't know how the fuck anyone does feature films. I mean, I imagine you pay people more, you have a bigger crew and you have a team of producers or at least a couple producers who are really hanging in there. And then the other thing with feature length films is a lot of times you don't need to shoot as much coverage for that kind of stuff. So like you can get through pages quicker, but still we did 7 pages a day, which is kind of a lot. And we did it in 2 days. I think my biggest takeaway is that A, I want to do more short films, and B, I want to like keep them very short or do like 4 pages a day tops.
Right. Or so have more days in the schedule for shooting.
Have more days. But the thing is like we couldn't afford to have more days because then that's paying crew for extra days and actors. Right. And so you kind of have to work within the restraints of time, budget, access. It's but anyway, all that said, I want to make more short films. It's fun.
Hell yeah.
Less probably less ambitious, I would say. Not like, at least like scale wise.
Right.
Because it's just, well, there's so many moving parts and so many people. And yeah.
I don't ever want to write scripts on a podcast ever again.
Yeah, I don't think that worked as well as I hoped.
Yeah, it made me feel really bad about it. It made me feel naked all the time.
Yeah.
Because obviously we were like, yeah, and obviously writing on a podcast, just hearing keyboards clicking would be rough. Yeah. but I know I've talked to you, and there are definitely some short films that I am writing and want to finish, and maybe the three of us can make a short film.
Let's do it.
What we'll
four
get,
of us? It's we'll get Stuart's brother in. Stuart's brother was on set. He was a huge help. Tremendous.
Oh hell yeah!
Tremendous. Resource and lightened up the mood a lot. Everyone was like, I have to talk to the script supervisor. I need to give him a hug because he was, he's a funny guy.
Right.
That he is.
Also saved our editor a ton of time because he took very good script supervising notes.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So that's awesome to hear. We have been holding off for like a month now that we talked about your movie. Now we're going to talk about.
Hold on. I do one last thing I want to say.
All right. All right.
I have an idea for a short film, not necessarily the concept, but how we can do it. All right. You ready for this?
Let's hear it.
I say us four, maybe a couple other, we throw Jay into the mix, you know, rent a Airbnb for a weekend and just film something that weekend that uses where we are, the people we have, you know, like something like that would be pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Got to come up with an idea, you know, I think that's like another takeaway is like you can get away with so much with so little, and if you want. And if people are excited or interested.
I mean, look at Skinamarink.
Yeah. I was impressed by that movie, but I thought it was boring as fuck.
I found out that it's by someone from Edmonton, which is basically Alberta's Vancouver, which is just next door to us. And I was pretty surprised by that. I haven't seen it yet, honestly.
It's really creative and interesting. I think it was made for like 15 grand or something like that.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But it is Stuart, you saw it, right?
I did.
And you thought it was boring as fuck too?
The thing was, is after I found out about the director's other stuff, I watched his other shorts and they were really good. And I think Skinamarink is really good for what they had and what they did. It didn't need to be more than like 30 to 40 minutes.
I think that's the thing. It was just too long. It was too long
for what it was. And I have a problem when I don't mind slow burn horror, but in this, the slow burn was just you linger, you might see some things and then loud noise. And that gets really repetitive when your film is essentially found footage.
What it did remind me of though, Matt, was House of Leaves.
Oh yeah, I've heard that.
Which is interesting. Like I feel like it's an interesting House of like if I remember correctly, don't like the windows and doors start to disappear and
and they're also like there I distinctly remember someone walking out a window and then walking back in another window as if they were walking down a hallway or something.
And I'm talking about Skinamarink. Or was
yeah, Skinamarink. Yes, there are windows and doors that disappear.
Yeah,
it was well done. It's just for me, I couldn't rewatch it. Probably, I mean, if I could watch like an edited version or something, but in whole, it's just a bit
a montage, montage highlight reel.
I think that's probably like I know I said it was boring as fuck, but like I'm incredibly impressed by it, considering the restraints and like. What that director managed to do with so little, after about 30, 40 minutes, I just could not pay attention anymore.
Yeah, it just needed to be shorter. I think that there's really effective stuff in there. And I'm happy it got as much promotion as it did, especially being such a small budget.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's like an 80 to 90 minute movie and it feels longer, which is not good.
Right. But 100 minutes.
Oh, 100 minutes? Well, that's 50 minutes too long.
Yeah. You know what? I saw a movie that... I'm guessing Skinamarink is one of those movies, and this is not a negative because some directors are really good at doing this, where not a lot happens in it.
But I've seen movies that where there's not a lot that happens and they feel boring.
I literally just said that some people are good at doing it. But is Skinamarink a movie where nothing really happens?
I mean, I
wouldn't say that. There's some forward momentum with what's happening.
Big things happen. It doesn't feel big.
The in-between to those story segments is just kind of feels like filler.
Right.
Like the once it gets to those like bigger sequences or when things are kind of starting to go down, those scenes are effective. It's just you have to go through whispering and long stretches of nothingness until there's a loud sound effect to cut to the next scene. And it's just that gets a little repetitive when it's a 100-minute movie.
Have you guys seen Under the Skin?
I have.
Scarlett Johansson.
That movie is great.
That's one of my favorite fucking movies. And I did not realize this, but it's one of those things. It's like, why didn't I look up the director sooner?
I thought you were going to say, why didn't I get picked up randomly to film this?
Yeah. Oh, seriously. Good way to die. Yeah, the director of Under the Skin is the director, Jonathan Glazer, of, for one, of Jake's interest, he's directed a fuck ton of Radiohead music videos, but he also directed The Zone of Interest, which is the Holocaust movie. Yeah. I saw it, and before we get into our movie of the year, The Zone of Interest is fucking phenomenal, and it's so fucking like creepy and scary, and like it's one of those movies where someone could watch it and go, nothing happens in it. But it is so like it is a fucking experience in just a complete, just like 100% on all fronts, audio and visual, like really good movie. They never show like to use like a common term, they never show the monster, which is obviously, it's a movie about a family who's living their idyllic life, and they happen to be the people who run Auschwitz. The father is the commandant of Auschwitz, and I don't want to spoil at what point in the war it's in, but it is a pretty like oh fuck. And it's fictional, but it's like very well researched, very, very like true to how it was. But like it's just you hear sounds and you're like, oh fuck! Like they're just like enjoying a fun day with the family in the pool, and you're just hearing awful fucking sounds. It's not super cliche where you're hearing people screaming and yelling help, but it is very much like, oh God, what is happening over there?
Mm.
And one scene that I thought was crazy, this isn't even that big of a thing, but the actress Sandra Hüller, who also is in Anatomy of a Fall, she's like showing her mom the garden and she's like, oh yeah, I worked so hard at making this garden the way it is. Oh, the things are over there. And over by the wall, the Jews are on the other side of it, local girls. And, and then over here I set up this. And it's just like, that's so fucking unnerving to hear a human being be so matter of a fact and just like, oh yeah, the rice is in aisle 6 about one of like the greatest tragedies Earth has ever seen. It's fucking wild. And he's such an incredible director that I just had to shout him out, and that movie is just fucking awesome.
I'm glad you're shouting him out. I don't think many people would check that out otherwise.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, it's going to be
I mean, it is getting Oscar bait. I was going to say, though, it is getting Oscar recognition. Yeah. So that's good.
To be fair, hearing you talk about it gets me more interested because I was interested by like reading like just little snippets of reviews and stuff. And I was like, okay, this seems good. But then the more I heard about it, I was like, oh man, I don't know if I want to watch a movie about the Holocaust. I don't know if I can handle that, but hearing about the craft and stuff makes me considerably more interested. I mean, I was interested in before. It's more just like, it's not a movie that I'm going to like come home after work and sit down and flip on, you know?
Yeah. I would say go see it in a theater. Like the sound in particular, like I thought I was tripping on fucking acid at the beginning of the movie because of the sound.
Is it still playing?
I think it just opened wide because of the Oscar nominees. It's great, man. And you don't see anything. So if you're listening to this and you're worried that you're going to see like torture and stuff, you don't see anything. It's really focuses on just like the boring everyday life of evil while something just like you can't even understand how a human can do something like that to someone else. And then you get to see them just be like I just checked in at work. Thank God I'm home, honey. Can I have a beer? Like, it's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it's pretty wild. He's a good director, man. Sorry?
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, highly recommend in theater just for the audio. But I thought it was really impressive.
It's definitely not as good as the movie we're about to talk about, though, right?
No, of course not. Nothing beats The Pool Ghoul. I'll say that much. I was dying to talk about this. And then Stuart said Jake asked us to wait, and I had a little tantrum. But then I was like, all right, it'll be funnier when Jake gets here.
Yeah, well, okay.
How about you take it away?
No, I want Stuart to start here.
All right.
Oh, I'm not even going to try.
The movie in question is Night Swim. it is a Blumhouse film, right? It was that nice January horror film. Basically, the pool is haunted.
I do want to point out this was Matt's idea.
You know what? And I was really excited for it because that first teaser trailer, it's the best scene in the movie. And then it immediately gets bad at the end of the scene.
Oh, wait, hold on. You didn't like it?
Oh. Oh, no, I loved it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you the wrong impression.
Stuart, we liked it. Stuart and I walked out and we were like, that's pretty good.
You already messaged Matt your opinion.
Yeah.
You just can't live.
I tried to salvage
it. I appreciate it.
I did get self-conscious there for a minute.
We were originally going to be that we like came back and Jake and I were going to do a little message before the episode saying like, oh, we fucking hated this movie, but we're going to tell Matt that we really liked it.
Oh, dude, I would have been like, are you guys fucking crazy? but yeah, that teaser trailer was the Marco Polo scene.
Honestly, it wasn't even my favorite scene.
I mean, as far as like a creepy like little snippet that you use to sell your movie,
yeah, I guess that's
I'm like, oh wow, like she, and also why is she being fooled by this Polo, this super ghoulish sound?
it's like her friend that she's playing with is like this young teenager. And all of a sudden he sounds like he's trying to do a like Christian Bale Batman impression. And you're like, wait, you can. It's like this whole scene is dependent on the fact that she doesn't cheat at Marco Polo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's just I did like that scene, though, just because the ghouls that show up in that scene are hysterical.
Yes. They look insane, very funny.
But yeah, I mean, the movie opens with a child drowning. And that's basically, that is really close to being the only death in the movie. I mean, you know, there's a lot of deaths that are.
Oh, yeah. There's no other death.
Where they'll talk about it, but that's the only one where we get to kind of be witness for the most part. And even then, I mean, not that I want to see a child drowning, but it's like, it sets up which is one of the movie's biggest problems, in the fact that this movie has zero self-awareness and plays it so straight to a point that you can't really have much fun with it other than a few scenes. But most of my enjoyment just came from Jake and I just saying pool puns and fucking off.
Yeah, no one was in the theater except for Stuart and I. So yeah. There'd be an actor.
I had a different experience.
There'd be an actor that'd show up and be like, who's that from? And I'd be like, oh, you know what? No one's here. I'm just going to Google it. And we'd look it up and we'd make pool puns at full volume. Like things would get bad.
That sounds so good.
And Stuart or I would be like, uh-oh, it looks like they jumped headfirst into the deep end.
It's like, they had no pool puns. I would have given this movie a point or two if they had some pool puns.
I think I would have enjoyed that movie quite a bit if it was just self-aware and just tried to be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. It's like, it's such a dumb concept, and then you don't really get much pool action in it. It's weird.
Yeah. And
then Carrie Condon's just fucking acting her ass off in this, and it makes the movie almost worse.
Oh, God. Wyatt Russell is so unintentionally hilarious in this movie. Oh, and I love Wyatt Russell. And so I don't think it's his, I don't think he did a bad job. I just think it's like really funny that, so basically for everyone listening, he's this baseball player who got injured.
The father of the family.
He starts doing physical therapy in his pool and he starts to get better. But as he starts to get better, he starts becoming like increasingly obsessed with his pool. It's just so fucking funny.
Yeah, there's that
leads to some incredible scenes.
He's like, my life was nothing before the pool, and it is so
funny.
Well, like they go to like couples therapy at one point, or they're seeing his doctor. No, it was a doctor for a follow-up. And the doctor's like, man, what have you been doing? He's like, we have a pool. And he's just super over the top excited to just say like,
it's like,
oh, yeah, I've been swimming in our pool that we have. You're just like, oh, OK. And they're not like playing it up.
No,
that's
not.
What makes it like you just can't even really like laugh with it because it's trying to be like this movie literally has a scene where like. They have the backstory with Bagul and they have to go meet some older person to tell them the tale of the pool ghost. And
which
it's just, there's nothing to even like twist to make funny. It's just like, oh, okay. They're just gonna explain this away. And I'm like, we don't even fucking care. I want to see pool carnage.
It was one of those times where I was like, this movie's bad. I need to know what's going on with the pool. And then they told me and I was like, oh, that sucks.
This movie, if they wanted to play it this straight, I could have been on board if they were just like, we're going to go batshit and just have Wyatt Russell go crazy from the get-go and have him just get increasingly violent as he's chilling in his pool. Then I could have at least been like, all right, it's dumb still. But like when he was going crazy and stuff, I got some good chuckles from it. It's so over the top and ridiculous. And he has like a Marco Polo joke that's just so just falls on deaf ears. Where he just like with his daughter, he's like, Marco, while he's like in front of the house, he's like, you're supposed to say polo. With his black eyes.
You're breaking the rules. I think my favorite two shot in that entire fucking movie. It's after like some bad shit has happened and people are suspicious of the pool, and there's just a shot of Wyatt Russell floating belly up in the pool, closing his eyes, and then it cuts to his wife in a bedroom window in a dark room watching him. It's one of the funniest fucking things.
And then when you do get to scenes where it could be crazy, they end really quickly. Like the scene with him when he's holding the kid when he's underwater. And he like locks in and they just kind of he had a seizure because they brought up that he has like a disorder that causes him to seize up with his muscles. And he goes into the pool and it's not that he's possessed and he just like decides to walk towards the deep end while he's got this kid on his shoulders after playing chicken with somebody. And the kid just like gets some bruises on his legs and everyone just thinks he's a fucking creep. And that's the end of it.
Yeah, that scene I think had the most potential for like being, because it was like a kind of a cool, like a pool party. It was daylight, and then he starts to, I don't know, get possessed by the pool demon or whatever. And I was like, oh, this could be good, but there's like no consequence to it. It was just.
And then they also, this is also a chunk into the movie after some already pretty established weird shit has been happening with this pool that you are just like, and if they didn't play it straight, it wouldn't be an issue, but they do. So then you just go, who the fuck would invite an entire party's worth of people over here with this? Because it's not the dad who must have done it, because he just wants to be in his pool.
Yeah,
he doesn't give a fuck. And then the mom is already like, I don't like this pool. So I don't understand where the decision was made for this party to occur. And it's just,
I think so the party dumb. was
I just wish it was fun.
Created. I think they started the party was so that their son would make friends.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that I was confused by, because like they set up this son as like kind of a like loner. He's not, he hasn't his growth spurt yet. And you're like, oh, at some point he's going to save the day or be like key to solving everything. And then that just never happens.
Well, that's actually a great point to bring up. And also that this movie has a bunch of random seeds that are being planted early on that you think are going to lead to something. Because, and I talked with it was one of you two about it. I think it was Jake, that they make it really, really clear that they want you to know that the boy that the daughter is interested in at school is a Christian. First, they like are really like beating you over the head with this guy's a Christian.
Yeah.
He invites her to be a part of this Christian swim team. He comes to the house. He's wearing a cross.
And then,
a bunch of nuns died in the pool.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, maybe they're going for a religious angle. That'd be interesting. No, there's nothing with it. They just have
boy was a cult guy and he knew that they had the pool, so he was trying to
you're just thinking like, what is the reason you have these seeds planted? And instead you just go like, I guess they just really wanted us to know that he was Christian. And yeah, there were some nuns. And then you're thinking, well, maybe we'll get some cool flashbacks of all these people dying. And it's like, no, what you'll get is a scene at the very end with the mother trying to save her son and a bunch of different ghoulish people around them swimming towards them. And it's not even, it's an under maybe 15 second scene.
Yeah. And then it's just fucking weird. I did like that when the mom tried to get the family to leave that first time. It's like a 1-2 punch of the first scene is the dad being like, what? Where are you going? Is this because of the pool? Are you leaving because of the pool? Which is like,
well, I mean, the other
so silly.
I mean, go ahead.
Sorry. And then right after, when they try to leave and he gets sick because he can't be far from the pool.
Yeah, he starts having withdrawals.
He's in bed and he's like, honey, can you take me down by the pool and dip my feet in it?
that was my favorite line in the movie. It was, he's so sickly and he's just like, please just let me go down by the pool just one more time. But then they also have undefined powers to this pool, because in like the beginning and up to a certain point, you just think, okay, the pool corrupts once you're in the pool. And then you're thinking, okay, that's the extent of it. But then, like, later in the movie, someone has a glass of water that the pool manages to knock off. And so it causes glass to break for a character, obviously, to step on the broken glass. And then there's scenes of Wyatt Russell. There's, like, multiple scenes of him just, like, taking a shower. And you're just like, why can't it control that water? You know what I mean? Like, it's like...
And they just don't follow up on it.
But he's still having withdrawals when he's taking showers at that point.
Oh, maybe.
That's why I was just kind of like, I don't know. Like,
I think the reason he got sick was because he tried to leave and the pool was like, nuh-uh.
But I thought part of it, though, was too because she was keeping him from going in.
No, I think it was just because, so he gets sick and pukes up all that black stuff, which also the lady who has moved away does.
Right.
But she can leave for some reason. I think that was just because, like, you can't leave because I need someone to be sacrificed for you to be able to leave. So that's why at the end, the son is, like, sick and can't leave. So then Wyatt Russell sacrifices himself to the pool.
But then how did...
And no one is sad about it. No one is upset.
It's like a quick, like they do like a cut and like, sure, some time has passed, but it's just them being like,
filling
the pool with cement or whatever.
Yeah, we could never let anybody see what happened here.
They lost their father.
But then you're also like thinking to
myself, the love of her life.
They're technically
the professional baseball player who was going to be like the golden egg for this family.
Yeah. And then they're like, we're going to cement the pool that he died in.
Which makes sense, like I guess, safety purposes, but cry in the scene or something.
Jake, it reminded me of the daughter in Beekeeper.
Oh, you guys saw Beekeeper?
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been gone a while, but I did see a lot of movies, and I was going to rattle them off.
Fuck yeah. We're going to have to do that.
Yeah, I mean,
hold on. Before the Night Swim, how many beers in a six-pack or whatever would you give it?
Oh, man. Probably one. Yeah. Like, it's not... Like Stuart said, there are some funny scenes, but, like, you can tell that, like...
They're not self-aware at all.
Maybe Wyatt Russell was the only one who knew that it was funny.
And because of that, he came off as over the top when everyone should have been over the top.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's probably one. It's a bummer.
I gave it a 2 on Letterboxd, but I think that's too high.
You know, honestly,
I'd probably give it a 2.
Here's the thing. It's well made. I've seen significantly worse movies. It's just... You're fucking about an evil pool.
I think that's the thing. It was just wasted potential, it felt like.
It's just like you could have done so much stupid, funny shit with that. And I thought the Marco Polo scene was hysterical. Like, there's a guy that looks like Killer Croc, and I thought that just took me back.
Just a giant pile of poop.
Yeah.
He looks like a poop monster.
Yeah, I was just like, oh my. Well, I was like, I thought these were just people in here. And there's like an actual, like, creature man. But yeah, I'd give it about a 2 almost just because of my experience with Jake was still funny.
Yeah.
I enjoyed my experience for the most. Like, I didn't come out, like, hating that we watched it because we were just basically... It was just us, and we just basically shat-talked the whole movie. But, yeah, I would never recommend it.
Yeah.
I will say, which I said to Jake after we watched it, I think it's really cool that Universal is taking these, like, low-risk, like, hey, we like this guy short. Give them a smaller budget and let them make a movie out of it. I think that's really cool. I think they should continue doing it. This just wasn't one that won.
Yeah, I agree. In my theater, we had a lot of people, and the people in front of me were playing games on their phone, and they were Snapchatting.
Oh, God.
And you weren't annoyed. Because you were like, well, it's just that. No, I'd still be annoyed, even if I didn't like the movie.
I was annoyed for sure. But then in the far right corner, there were people having a conversation at full volume for most of the movie. And then there, in front of those people, there were some fucking kids who kept turning on their flashlight. And listen, I did not realize how powerful an iPhone flashlight was.
Oh, they're bright as fuck now.
Until you're in a dark room that gets literally completely illuminated by it. It fucking sucked, man. I was so mad.
Damn, Stuart and I got lucky then because there was no one. At one point, someone walked in and Stuart were like, someone's here. But it was just
someone checking to make sure no one's
a staff member making sure that like people are in here, so we should let the projector run.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
And I mean, I'd be just like, if it was Jake and I and even just one other person, I wouldn't have said a goddamn word. It's, you know, I'm respectful like that. So, I mean, other than maybe occasionally sometimes when we're in a movie, I'll whisper something to, like, Jake. But
right.
It's just, like, I don't understand people who are, like, why even go to the movie if you're just going to be on your phones? Like, Jake and I still were talking about the movie. Like, we're very active in this watch.
Yeah, when I was on my phone, it was relating to the movie. You know, yeah. I wasn't texting some. Well, actually, we were bullying Steven a little bit, but.
Well, no, that's good. No, because Steven was being mean to us.
We were being bullied by Steven, so we were defending ourselves.
To be fair, I've never met Jake and I had a great laugh at this. Our friend Steven was angry at us because we wanted to hang with him.
Yeah, that sounds like Steven.
Makes sense, right?
Makes total sense. Like, man, your friends want to hang with you? How could you? Fuck off.
All right,
dude.
I'm gonna rattle. Funny experience with the other one too.
I'm gonna rattle off these movies that I saw while I was gone, and I'll just say one word about them. All right. Yeah. Saltburn. Okay. Paris, Texas. Loved it. That was two words.
Yeah. There you go.
Beekeeper. Fun. Night Swim. Just talked about it. Sucked. Air. Sucked. When Evil Lurks. Wow.
What?
Asteroid City. Past Lives. Made me cry.
Hell yeah.
Beautiful movie.
So yeah, I saw some movies.
Dude, it was cool. You went off. That's great.
On top of that, I also watched a show that Christopher Nolan himself called Unprecedented. It is one of the strangest 10 episodes of television I've ever seen. I watched episode one about a month ago and was like, I don't think I can do this. But I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I slowly watched all 10 episodes the entire time after I finished each episode, thinking I was not going to watch any more of it because I just couldn't do it. But I finished it, and I'm not sure if I liked it, but it is probably one of the most unique, strangest, infectious shows I've ever seen that feels like it was created by an alien. That is The Curse by Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie. Oh my God. I like cannot, it's like funny, but it's not funny at all, but it still is funny. The finale is you will not expect it. Like, I don't care where you think it's going to go. You are wrong. I 100% guarantee you. It is impeccably acted. It is incredibly well shot, but it feels like an alien made it. It is so bizarre. I don't know if I can recommend it. but I think people should at least give it a shot. Like I was thinking about it today where I was like, you know, The Bear, you guys should 100% watch. Like, you will love it. I know it. The Curse, Matt, I know you've seen a couple episodes, but I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised. Matt, I know you're kind of into it. Like, you seem to enjoy what you've seen, but I also get if people are like, I cannot sit through this show because it is so uncomfortable from top to bottom, but the performances are amazing. Nathan Fielder is incredibly awkward. Like I feel like that movie is what Nathan Fielder thinks real life is. it is incredible. Emma Stone is amazing. I just saw Poor Things and she was amazing in it, but I think The Curse is probably one of my favorite performances she's ever had because she so much comes across and just like the looks she gives, the way she delivers lines. There's one scene in the final episode or the second to last episode where she just has a look on her face that is like, it captures so much in just like one look that she gives. But for those who don't know, it is basically about a couple who is trying to launch an HGTV show in New Mexico. And that sounds bland because it fucking is.
Okay, I don't know if explaining more gives it away.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
But I'll tell you what, no matter how much I explain it, if you make it to episode 10, you will it's something else. Like, it's so hard to describe. I think like one of the things that I love so much about it though was how it was shot. Everything was shot on super long lenses. And through things like through a window, through car windows,
to the wall.
Exactly.
To the wall.
but it feels very like voyeuristic, which I think fits the themes of it incredibly well. Yeah, it's bizarre. Matt, I know you've seen a couple episodes. I know you say you're going to watch more. I'm excited for you to get to episode 10 if you make it that far. I wouldn't blame you if you had to stop though.
I finished episode 2, and I'm going to keep watching because I like it.
Have you laughed?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. I've definitely laughed. It's there's another show that I watch called The Mac and I, which I'll talk about a little bit. But
is it related to Mac and Me?
No, it's about Japanese girls training to be geisha. It's like at least the first two episodes haven't demanded you to see the next episode. You know what I mean? Like, it's not an anthology where each episode is a different story, but there haven't been like Breaking Bad style, like the episode ends on a fucking gunshot and then you have to figure out what happens immediately
because
it compels you.
Yeah.
I need to push myself to watch it.
That's how I felt. Like I said, it took me a while. There are some incredible cameos, especially in the final episode that, not incredible. Like, I don't think they'll blow you away, but there's some pretty interesting cameos that I think were, well picked. But yeah, Christopher Nolan said it was unprecedented, Stuart. You got to watch it.
Streamer is it on?
It's on
it's on Max Showtime? In America?
No, it's on Showtime. Showtime.
Is it worth buying a month of it to watch?
I mean, do you have Paramount Plus?
Do you like Nathan Fielder?
I like Nathan Fielder a lot. I liked The Rehearsal. I preferred Nathan for You.
See, it's weird.
This is like the part of The Rehearsal that is less like Nathan for You, I feel like.
But see, that wasn't really the reason I disliked The Rehearsal. I liked some of the weirdness. I didn't dislike it. I just didn't love it like everyone else. I dug it. I just didn't like. I didn't come out because I had a lot of people just say how much they loved it, and I was like, I liked it.
Stuart, I'm gonna go out on a limb. I don't think you'd like The Curse. I'd be curious though. To be proven wrong.
I desperately want you to watch it just to hear your opinion.
Yeah.
Because I'm very curious what you would think.
What the common like, man would think.
No, not even the common man.
You're just not a like, common man. Just, have you seen you?
I think if you weren't wild about The Curse, it's less funny than The Curse, I would say. Although I was laughing pretty hard in episode, I think it was episode two where Nathan was, Nathan Fielder was trying to show his old coworker a video. Matt, I don't know if that was in that episode.
Oh yeah, that's episode two.
Yeah, he's like, no, I gotta watch it on your PC, and then like pulls out Gatorade, opens it up, and puts it on his lap, and you're like, oh my god, I know what he's doing. This is so hard to watch.
That episode also has a whole thing about like white guilt and Native American art. And I really like that too. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. They go into a lot of that. I think they do it really well. There's like another part later on where, Emma Stone's character like meets a Native person and the Native person is like, I'm going to pretend to be extra Native in front of her. And she gets like really into it. And there's no punchline, but it's just like the interactions between these characters are as you'd expect. And it's very good. But yeah, that finale. Bizarre.
I'm excited to get to it, man. I've never seen you like this before. You're glowing.
Well, that's the thing. I don't even know if I liked it. I'm never going to watch it again. I'll tell you that.
Oh, man. Speaking of a show that I'll definitely watch again, The Mac and I, it's like the polar opposite of The Curse. I can promise you that. It's a feel-good slice of life series. One season. It definitely leaves a lot of things like unconcluded, but I don't think it's going to get a second season. But it's definitely satisfying where it left it. And it's about two girls. They go to this geisha house and... one of them is not a good geisha. The other one's a great geisha. She's got great potential. So the one that's bad becomes the cook, and the one that's the geisha becomes, you know, the trainee. And there's like zero like bad feelings about it. Like it's like she found her passion, and it's all very feel good and fun. And there's a lot of like Japanese cooking in it. and the last episode, whereas you're like flabbergasted at what you saw, I had to stop myself from making a noise because I was crying. And like my parents were in the room with me and I was trying to stifle how much I was crying. And I literally, if I didn't bite my lip, I literally would have gone, oh. And like, I was just bawling. It's a fucking great show. Really good slice of life, Japanese show. I love that shit. So good stuff. Just want the girls all to be happy and to live with passion. That's the kind of guy I am.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, brother. Oh man. You know what? I wanted to talk to Jake about Blood Meridian real quick.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a book.
Stuart.
It's a wild fucking book that another thing I would like you to read. I would love Steven to read it and give us a report.
Steven? No, I was going to say Steven might actually like it. I think if they made a movie of it, Steven might like it.
Yeah, Steven would be like, what the hell? I don't understand what anything this book's trying to say.
But if they made a movie of it, it would suck for sure. Stuart, it's a Cormac McCarthy book. It is like his I don't want to say magnum opus because he's written so many excellent books, but like that's like the one he'll probably be remembered for, you know,
if there was one.
Yeah. But it is, I mean, Matt, you're reading, you probably sum it up better than I can because my experience with it has been very piecemeal, I would say.
Yeah. So it's a very interestingly written book. It's kind of written like a recounting of something someone heard, except it's written in the present tense, and it's very descriptive and it uses a lot of old fucking words that just do not make sense.
Yeah. I have to look up a lot.
there was this one time when he's like, talking about the kid finding so it's about this kid. And from what I understand, this kid is, he ran away from home. His mom died in childbirth. And also, it does not say his mom died in childbirth. It says something like, here, dude, I'm actually going to pull the book up. This was a great line. And I'm like, man, this guy is a fucking great writer. But this was like the most confusing thing I had to read like three times. So he says, night of your birth, 33, the Leonids, they were called. God, how the stars did fall. And basically what he's saying was he was born in 1933. During a meteor shower that is historically called the Leonids. I had to look all that up. And then it says, the mother dead these 14 years did incubate in her own bosom the creature who would carry her off. Which is like, I'm just going to read it again. The mother dead these 14 years did incubate in her own bosom the creature who would carry her off. Which is literally saying she gave birth and died during childbirth. But it's like really like interesting language like that. And there are some conversations and they don't have quotation marks.
None of them do. That's his style. None of his books use quotation marks.
Oh really?
Yeah. Even the Road, No Matter What You Read by him, he like indents instead. Which I
it
like.
It kind of keeps me in the story.
Yeah. I mean, I like on like a technical level, but I'd be lying if I said that like sometimes I got confused as to if someone was actually talking or not. And sometimes I wouldn't know who was saying what or if they were saying anything.
Yes. That's the next thing I was going to say is that it like keeps me from like remembering, like whenever you get to like a break in the page, then a conversation starts and like the line break happens, you go, okay, here's a conversation piece and you can kind of skim through it. It stops me from doing that, but also a lot of the times there'll just be lines of dialogue and I just will not, I'll have to be like, wait, who the fuck said this? And I think there are times when three people are having a conversation and then you really don't know who the fuck are talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuart, it's basic. It's about like a teenage runaway in like the 19th century, right? and joins.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he joins like a...
Is it like a Western?
Then. It's a Western. He like joins...
Yeah, like 1849, I think.
Yeah, really? He joins a gang that is absolutely brutal. Like, just... They leave a trail of blood wherever they go. But like the guy who leads it has like a very particular philosophy that kind of permeates everything they do and the direction the story goes and everything. It's really good. I mean, it's considered one of the best American novels of all time, and it's completely understandable, but it's also hard to get through because I felt like every sentence I had to like reread and try to understand.
It's like every sentence is a puzzle. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's good. I think like it's probably the most impressive of his books, but it's not my favorite just because like The Road or even All the Pretty Horses, which I recommended to you, is like much easier to follow. Just is absolutely destructive and sad and horrific, but easier to follow.
Oh, okay. So All the Pretty... I saw that there was a movie adaptation that looked like a fucking romance movie. So
it is. All the Pretty Horses is not a romance novel. I didn't see the movie adaptation.
Okay. I haven't seen it either.
It is an absolutely heartbreaking journey into the South.
Damn.
That is.
I'm really happy I found them.
Yeah.
I mean, you were the one who recommended me read them, so.
Yeah, but I would say if you finish, when you finish Blood Meridian, don't like necessarily take that as like all his books are going to be kind of a chore to read. Like I said, All the Pretty Horses I was able to get through fairly quickly, and The Road is, it's not written in that like 19th century perspective. It's written in a more modern perspective, so the language is easier to grasp.
Right.
I read The Road.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
That's
yeah. Everywhere I see, after having bought Blood Meridian, is that it's like one of the last Cormac McCarthy books you should read, because it is like I saw someone post on Reddit like, what the fuck am I reading? And so I was really curious to see what other people thought of the writing style, and people were like, he was like, I'm a casual reader. I read like two books a year. And people are like, if you read two books a year, you should not read Blood Meridian. It is like, you really need to be like a really dedicated reader to get the most out of it and to actually get through it, understanding what is happening. Cause it's so dense with just style and that, you know, era of writing. It's really interesting. Yeah. I dig it so far.
Incredibly bloody. There's the way he writes violence is so like abrupt and uncomfortable and like thoughtless, especially in that book. It's in The Road too. I mean, if you're at The Road too, Stuart,
The Road's pretty bleak.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently they're supposed to make a movie. John Hillcoat is directing it, who also did The Road film. But apparently they've been trying to make it for a very long time, because I don't know how you'd make that into a movie.
Yeah, the Ridley Scott was going to make it at one point. James Franco was like making his own like test footage to try to get the rights to make it.
I wonder what happened with him.
Yeah, what happened to James Franco? You can watch James Franco's test footage, which I've heard everyone says sucks. Which, to be fair, like, I've liked James Franco in like comedic stuff, but I've not really liked him in anything else.
Harry Osborn.
Well, fucking, I mean, that's the performance. I mean, how can you say no to that? That was fucking perfect.
Fantastic. Well, I saw the All best right. movie so far this year in theaters. After
Night Swim?
After Night Swim.
The Beekeeper.
Oh, Bite Beekeeper is great. I saw Godzilla Minus One Minus Color.
Oh, cool.
Oh, hell
is it
yeah.
worth it?
Gorgeous. Absolutely. Because it wasn't just like a filter. They actually did like work on the black and white for it. So,
all right. Maybe I'll go see it again.
Highly recommend It was such a good movie. Like 100, without question, one of the best movies last year.
Is it really worth it? Is it worth spending?
It was to
$30. All right.
But also, you know, it's me.
All right. Well, so. Maybe I'll go see that. I've been.
If anyone is just interested in seeing the movie, even if you hadn't seen it, my brother went too, and he hadn't seen it in color. So his first time watching it was the black and white version.
Oh, cool.
And he loved it. And I loved it again.
Cool.
And it kind of also is one of those things, while the movie in color already is gorgeous, there's something about black and white with films that feature a lot of, digital, you know, CGI work. But God damn, is it a good looking movie. And in black and white, it does make some scenes a little bit more ominous, which I liked. So if anyone loved that movie and you have a chance to see it in black and white, I say do it.
Cool. I'll try as long as it's being shown somewhere near here. Hopefully they release like a 4K Blu-ray that has both versions.
I would hope so. I can see them releasing it in two different releases. I hope that's not the case, but either way, phenomenal movie.
Dope. All right. Well, I'm done, boys. I need to go pee, as always, when it hits the hour mark in a podcast.
I gotta pee too.
All right. Well, let's all go pee. Stuart, I love you, buddy.
Love you too, Matt.
All right, I'm gonna think of you when I go pee.
Thank you.